action now on post-implementation review process. Yes. I give the floor to Michael.
Good morning, everybody. We're looking at this session at Agenda Paper 7, and the purpose is to seek advice from the ASAF regarding our post-implementation review process and objectives. Now, so far we've completed two post-implementation reviews, the first on IFRS 8 on segments, and the second on IFRS 3 business combinations. Now, both of those have led the board to embark on some standard setting activity. With IFRS 8, there's some narrow scope amendments that the board has decided to propose, and we're in the process of balloting an exposure draft for that. Business combinations, of course, we had the discussion yesterday on goodwill and payment intangibles, and in addition to that, the board has been discussing and decided to propose some clarifications to the definition of a business. Back to the process itself, though, and the process or the due process handbook that we have does set out in very high-level terms some basic requirements for our post-implementation review, namely that we should look at the sort of important or contentious issues from the development of the standard to see how those have turned out. To look at issues that have come to the board's attention since the standard was implemented, and to identify any unexpected costs or any implementation problems related to the new standard. Now, the approach that we've taken has been a two-phase approach. We first of all looked at sought to identify the main areas that we should focus the review on. that has then gives rise to a request for views to gather information broadly from stakeholders. And in addition to seeking views from stakeholders, we use those areas that we identify as the sort of key areas to identify what academic studies have been done that might be relevant to the board's consideration. Then in the second phase, we consider the information that we've learnt from that public consultation and also from the academic studies to consider what lessons the board can learn and if there is any follow-up work that should be undertaken in response to the specific standard. The questions that we have for the ASAF are set out on page 5 of paper 7. And those are, what advice do you have with regards to the objective of the post-implementation review? What do you think has been helpful with regards to the process, the ones we've undertaken so far? And what advice do you have for the process itself and how we've undertaken that? So if we start perhaps with those two questions, and interested to get your thoughts and your advice.
So we just want to say that we're very supportive of a post-implementation review process. We actually do that on our own standards within Canada that we write. And we think it's important to get the feedback on the implementation issues and allow people to let you know what they struggled with the most, that sort of thing. What we don't see specifically in the objectives that you list in paragraph 3 is really getting to the heart of consistent application. So is there anything during the process where you can find out if you've achieved your objective of comparability? You know, more and more we're looking for comparability of reporting. We know that it facilitates raising of capital in different markets and that sort of thing. And so if you can build anything into that specifically in your questions or in your as you look for information, I think that would be a good idea. You're not asking about the academic studies yet, are you?
We'll come on to that later, yes. So, Linda, you mentioned, I think, that you undertake your own post-implementation reviews in Canada. Did I hear correctly?
I've done one, right? Yes. Okay. Yes, we've done one. We're getting ready to do another.
Okay. And has consistent application been a feature of that, and what in particular have you
looked at? It has been
at?
In the subsequent roundtable. So as we've talked to people, and we're going to look at how to build this into the future, we've asked particularly, you know, in that setting when you're face-to-face with your stakeholders, we're able to ask questions that lead us to where there would be an improvement in application and consistent application if we were giving different types of guidance, you know, that sort of thing. So we have, over the process of doing the first round of face-to-face, honed in on that ourselves, which was the genesis of making the commentary.
Well, it's a good subject to report upon because there is a unanimous view on this. And it is a positive one on top of it, so everybody is satisfied with the process that is followed, that you just described. And post-implementation reviews are really deemed useful, bringing useful information to the fore. The result of that is that there is a willingness to see post-implementation reviews become one of the ISB research activities to identify, to support the identification of possible improvements, and so take this out of the specific channel that you have it here. It is one compulsory step in your due process. You have to make your after sales service type of. So do it, but with a broader scope. It could be any standard that is identified as raising issues in practice, whether it was issued before or after a particular date doesn't really matter. And the objectives in the scope of the review itself should no longer look at whether issues were contentious initially or not, that has lost relevance at that point. It's really what works and doesn't work in practice. And so it should be essentially guided by the search for improved financial reporting and not seeing whether it was right or wrong to do one particular thing at a particular time.
Mm-hmm. So two questions out of that, Francis. One, you said it could be any standard and we don't have to stick to any date, and that seems to make sense. How would we pick which standards to do a post-implementation review on, and how many should we do at a time, or you know, over a period of time?
I don't have definite answers to those questions, but for example, one in a discussion that we had and also linked to the agenda consultation, IFRS 5 seemed to be a good candidate for such a review because it has been identified as a standard that causes issues in practice. So it would be, you know, out of learning what works and not works in practice that this would arise. And in fact, there is a recommendation that it would be one item in the agenda consultation. So in the agenda planning of the ISB, there would be room for post-implementation reviews. I don't know. Certainly not three or four in a year. I mean,
maybe one or two, right?
At probably a maximum, but that has not been discussed. But it would be part of your activities.
Andreas.
Just follow up on another thing that Francois has raised. Francois, you said about not following up on the contentious issues. Is that for the older standards, or would you also apply that to the newer standards as well?
For everything. The issue is, what is not working in practice? Where is the user's need not well fulfilled? What is burdensome in the implementation? What is costly? And maybe it's something that we thought would not be costly, and maybe the issue that arises is the one that has not caused controversy initially. So, and maybe it is the one that caused controversy, but it's no longer relevant. The relevance is this is just not working well.
Yeah.
Andreas?
First on Ian's point, the first one, how do you pick the issues or the standards? I think the IFRS Interpretations Committee might be a good source. So if you see that repetitively issues are coming on a certain standard, that is probably a prime candidate then for review. As to the question, I would strongly endorse what Francois had just said. I think if you looked into the criteria listed in paragraph 3 and bounced these off the PIR of IFRS 3, I think there are a few dimensions where you could say, well, isn't that worth a second look too? For instance, have there been any issues with regulators? So, for instance, IFRS 3 and the impairment test has always been among the top three issues on our regulators' error list. So the question is that something that has been expected, or was it contentious when the standard was developed? No, probably not, but it is an issue that certainly you should be cognizant and taken into account, I think. So probably these three factors need a little bit of broadening or revision. And I would echo what Francois said in terms of don't look at whether something was contentious or not, but look at is it working, is it not working, and if it is not working, can it be rectified, or is it incomplete, or is it in need of an overhaul?
Well, the same point as Andreas made. I mean, the number of requests for interpretation raised to the IFRS Interpretation Committee is a good indicator of a standard which needs to be reviewed, looked upon, and so on. I mean, for instance, when you issued the IFRS 11, you've been submerged, the IFRS Interpretation Committee has been submerged by requests for clarifications. A small point on the process, when you say that the way you want to identify implementation issues is through, again, review of issues submitted to the Interpretation Committee, target outreach with large international audit networks, security regulators, and selected others. I do believe that among the selected others, you should include the national standard setters of the most important countries adopting IFRS.
Thanks, Hans. Overall, I think that the post-implementation reviews, it's a good concept. I guess from my perspective, I think there has to be a little bit of caution that, if you look at some of the standards that are being developed and how much debate and discussion, etc., there is, that, you know, and maybe for me, I'm sort of seeing IFRS 3 in this light as well, where, you know, a lot of the arguments that were put forward previously about changing from amortizing goodwill to not amortizing goodwill, and it almost sounds like those same discussions are happening again. And maybe the concern is, well, I mean, you could just carry on with standard setting. And if you look at, you know, some of the contentious things with leases, contentious things with insurance contracts, maybe a concern I have is that doing a post-implementation review, is it, you know, does it create this situation where those discussions are reopened and you carry on having these discussions because not everybody, you know, was unanimous that was the way to go. So while I think they're good and while I think it's good to identify areas that are not working, I think there seems to be a little bit of caution that it's not a case of just reopening things that were being discussed. Because the concern there is that, you know, how does the timing then work with regards to addressing these things? You know, there are concerns that, you know, we really have a standard, let's say, on goodwill, etc., but we don't have standards on, again, extractive industries, to use an example. And people are saying, well, you know, we keep on working on some of the existing things and we're never getting round to some of the other things because...
Or the very old and deficient standards.
Because of a lack of resources. So, you know, one has to find that right balance, I think.
And Jay?
Thank you, Hans. Two observations. One is relevant to the objective. I agree with Kim's point that currently, paragraph 3 provides three, you know, objectives. But if you look at the objectives, all those objectives try to identify the issues arising from the new standards. What I'm worried about that it will result in, or maybe give the people an impression those new standards have a lot of problem there. So I hope that PIR not only address the issue, but also in general try to positively provide some message to the stakeholders. Those standards whether they have been implemented maybe for 2 years, whether the information provide useful information to the users, whether the standards has meet the objective of the standards positively, and then go to some issues. I believe positive review should be first. Otherwise, the board made a wrong decision there. I hope that the objective should be more higher level, not only just address the issues. The second point I would like to make is relevant to the process. I agree with Alberto said that currently the target outreach mainly with large international audit network, security regulators, and selected others. I hope that other stakeholders should also be included, such as preparers, users, as you addressed, investors, and also not only large international auditing network. Some local large accounting firms, they have a different view with large international auditing firms, and they can find some special, localized issues. So I hope that targeted stakeholders should be, much more broad than current stakeholders.
GM.
Okay. I understand that the main role of the PIR is to examine whether there are any implementation issues and whether the standard improved the decision usefulness of financial reporting. It seems that to me that the current objective in PIR described in paragraph 3 is mainly focused on the practical implementation concerns. I think it's okay, but if we consider the objective of financial reporting in conceptual framework, the current objective of PIR looks too narrow. Therefore, I think it should be more focused on fundamental issue of whether the standard improves the decision usefulness of financial reporting.
I agree with those comments and some of the ones that I've made before as well. I would just add, in terms of objective, one of the things that you might like to add is just identifying lessons learned for other projects. So that should be one of the things that come out of that. You probably already know this yourself, but what we found as a user of the PIR outcomes is it wasn't always clear to us where the feedback came from and whether or not it was a particular issue with a jurisdiction or local regulator, etc. So it would be helpful to have a better understanding of some of the background of where the information it came from, just to understand whether it's a broader issue or whether it was a narrow specific issue. But we're very supportive of the process, and we'd certainly rather that you spent your time on the PIRs than the transition resource groups.
Those are
pre-implementation. Yeah.
Constantly on the review.
Similar comment to Chris. I think the primary objective being whether the standard is operating as intended, but a secondary objective you might consider is that are there process improvements or things that you could find along the way. We've seen that through our PIRs, even if it's how we keep our files after a project is done for research in the future. Somewhere. So the process improvement point has been useful to us.
Okay. Now, I think, Linda, you had mentioned academic reviews and what we might want to learn about that. Now, academic reviews have been a feature of our reviews, both the ones that we've done so far, and have been based on or focused on topics that we've identified also for the request for information. So we've had a review, we've used an academic fellow to review available academic literature, see what lessons can be learnt from those studies, and then we've compared the results from those reviews with the feedback that we've got from the request for information. So interested to hear your views on the usefulness of that. And I think perhaps we should pick up the question about timing of reviews with that as well, because I think it goes hand in hand. At the moment, our due process handbook requires that we look at standards after 2 years of global implementation. Well, in practice, that typically means 3 years after effective date. And so interested to hear your thoughts, A, on the use of academic studies and the benefits of those, and secondly, on the timing of the reviews.
So thank you. So I think you're in a unique position on the two you've done, because academics are almost always doing studies on business combinations and segments. And our interaction with academics is that typically their cycle time is longer. So if you're trying to stick to the 2 to 3 years, I think you're going to have difficulty getting a wealth of data from completed studies. So you may need to consider that. But the other option you have, and what we do in Canada, is we have an academic advisory council. And so we take matters to our academic advisory council as needed. You know, when we need their feedback, so you can get some interim feedback that way, but I think if you're actually looking at completed studies, you're going to have a timing issue.
Yeah. You might wonder if we don't do them too soon to begin with. Andreas.
Thanks, Hans. I also think that 2 years is definitely too soon for any academic study, especially if it is a ranked journal. I mean, you're rather looking into time spans of 7 to 10 years even. So it doesn't come as a surprise that the majority of the studies that you cite on IFRS 3 have actually to do with the first phase rather than the second phase of the project. So I think that's the natural time span of something like that. I would echo what Linda had said in terms of engaging into regular exchange with an academic body. At least it might give you some indication as to things you might want to look into. In terms of the 2 years in general, I think it very much depends on the project. So there might be some things that are rather narrow, rather focused, and probably could be dealt with in 2 years already, especially if you have a project where you know you have parked an issue and that issue is becoming more urgent. So therefore, 2 years might be the right time span. Generally speaking, I think you should rather be looking into 3 to 5 years. I think it gives you far better experience. And I'm also keen to say that for some projects, I could even imagine that you do a second PIR sometime thereafter. Because if you think of, say, IFRS 3, you've now done your first one, but it might well be that some issues actually iron out, new issues pop up. So control the issues and probably just looking at the IFRS Interpretations Committee, see if new issues are popping up that you haven't considered beforehand. And if so, it might be a good way of thinking of a second PIR on the same standard.
And on the other hand, could you see that for some we wouldn't do a PIR at all?
I'm keen to say IS 33, but no, I wouldn't ban any from the start. So, for instance, you probably would say that IS 2 has been very, very stable. But if you look at the revision of the conceptual framework, I mean, you're importing some new concepts, and if you question, are these concepts in line with the specific standard? It might not be that you need to overhaul the entire standard and what the standard is saying, but probably to bring it in line with the new concepts might be one way of thinking of it.
But I guess I'm trying to control the process. So if you're talking about doing some of them twice and going back and doing some of the old ones, you know, we've got a huge portfolio there.
Sure.
But take us the next 20 years.
Well, should be lucky. But but I think first things first, if you really look into the IFRS Interpretations Committee's log, I think it comes down to probably no more than a handful of standards that are regular visitors. And some of these, I mean, have hit the board already. If you think of IAS 12, I mean, you had a project already. So it doesn't say that probably everything could be solved with a PIR only. It probably needs more action for some. Others probably might be doing well with just the PIR and some limited impact.
I mean, I guess another question on the same line is, should we do a PIR for every new standard 2, 3, or 5 years after it's been implemented? Or should sometimes we say, looks like it's going okay and we've got more important PIRs to do with other standards?
I haven't thought about this, but as a rule of thumb, I'd say I wouldn't rule out that from the start. I would probably, if you feel that you have no indications that something has gone extremely wrong, ask the question, for instance, in an agenda consultation. But I would do some sort of consulting, I think, that rather than saying skip this one entirely.
Very consistent comments with what we've heard so far. So 2 to 3 years after the publication of standard is something that does not help benefit from academic studies, and academic studies are important and may be one indicator that a post-implementation review is not needed. So, but that would be longer time after publication and implementation. There is, however, emphasis on work that comes earlier in order to ensure that the implementation of the standard will be satisfactory, and that is activities that are pre-publication, eventually post-publication, but immediately thereafter, so that indeed the standards can be implemented as they were intended, so that you give them the most producing the results which are expected from them. And to Jan's question, yes, if you look at post-implementation reviews as a tool to help improve, when there is no indication that an improvement is needed, you don't need it.
Yukio.
Thank you. Before making a comment on academic review, I would like to add my comment on the PIR process. I'm sorry. In terms of the post-implementation of IFRS 8 and IFRS 3, we believe that information gathering was generally successful. However, there was ambiguity as to how to leverage the information obtained during the PIR process when deciding the way forward. Although it would be difficult to establish the defined process, further consideration would be helpful to manage expectations from constituents or stakeholders. As for how the post-implementation review could be improved, we suggest the ISB to consider asking questions about possible solutions as well as area of challenges in the request for view. We think this would help expedite the standard setting process and promote efficient use of resources. In addition, we believe the post-implementation review should not be used as a pretext for not addressing the need for stakeholders in a timely manner. If these needs are considered to be urgent, we suggest the ISB clarify the effect. As for the academic review, we don't believe the ISB should delay the post-implementation review just because academic research is not available, because having sufficient academic research would require a considerable period, and waiting for the research outcome would prolong the process considerably. So we think that by doing so, the ISB would fail to accomplish the ultimate objectives of the post-implementation review.
Jen Chao.
Thank you, Hess. Just 2 points. First point is that I believe that academic literature review should be included in the process of the PIR. I believe that academic findings are very helpful for us. For example, some of empirical research, they will provide us evidence whether the standards, you know, meet our objective, whether the information provide useful, actually useful value, relevance information to the users, and whether additional information needed to enhance relevant relevance. So this kind of evidence could be supported or available from the academics. And also, the academic research sometimes are a little bit different from auditors or preparers' views. Sometimes they will look at the issues much more fundamentally, and it will be help us to look at the issue and find the fundamental solution to those issues. So I believe that academic literature review is helpful. And secondly, with regard to the how many years of the implementation we should concern, I agree that maybe 2 years is too short, as Andrew suggested, because I'm familiar with the academic research. Sometimes they are using time series data analysis. 2 years is too short. And from my point of view, maybe 5 years or even longer could help them to do this kind of, you know, more scientific research to identify the issues and find whether the standard is really useful. Because the usefulness of the information should receive from the market reaction. But this kind of reaction, the data should base the much more longer time period. So from my point of view, maybe 2 years really too short for academic research.
So conclusion, we should only do them after 5 years?
Maybe, yeah.
Chris?
So certainly support the use of academic research. We think it's it does provide different context and more useful information. I'm not sure we'd go quite so far as the 5 years, but we'd certainly agree that 2 years is too short. So what we'd be suggesting is that perhaps you could build the academic research in almost from day one, from the implementation date or even earlier, to make sure that you've got academics who are actively thinking about what the research should be, so it's not sort of a surprise at the end of the day. So that would be our suggestion.
Jean is certainly going to tell us that the academic research is
This is just by the idea. In order to avoid the 2 years problem for incorporating the academic research result into PIR process, I think IASB can utilize the IFRS Research Forum you organize every year. By inviting specific the academic research on relevant standard and having them present at the IFRS Research Forum, then standard setters and academics could cooperate and mutually benefit from each other.
Andreas?
We want one additional comment as regards academic studies. I mean, having a foot in academia in some sort, I think I just want to probably caution your expectations, because the questions that from a standard setting point are interesting are not necessarily interesting to an academic journal. So if you just say, has the standard worked as expected, this is not sexy, right? Mm-hmm. So
It is difficult to really formulate a research question that is both of interest to the standard setter and the academic world slash the journals. Right. And if it is not, I think you will probably hardly find any researcher who is going to spend 3, 4, 5 years of their life in working just for you with no benefit in terms of publications in a ranked journal.
And Andreas, you mentioned there about sort of formulating a research question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that isn't something that we've done in the two reviews so far. We've simply looked at what academic studies have been done without any form of sort of commissioning of the work ourselves. And I certainly sort of saw that as being important from an independence point of view. But I'd be interested in your thoughts. I mean, should we be thinking about formulating a question for academics to respond to?
I think so. I mean, that ties into Jean's point, I think, because the questions you have, I think you want supportable evidence. Mm-hmm. But the problem is if the academics are focusing on something totally else, they might complement your research, but they could certainly not be taken as a substitute. So if you asked a research question and probably addressed it through the research forum, that would be one way of doing it.
Yeah.
I think, yes, that's the way to go.
But there is also more and more academics who are looking for evidence that their activity is useful for the public at large. So the fact that it's commissioned by a public interest body.
No, I don't think we should commission, but we can ask, we could express an interest for academics to answer certain questions.
Yeah.
And then because they might think that then they are doing relevant research and that might entice them to do it. But I don't think we should pay for
commission
that.
Commission would not necessarily the right word.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that really, I think, sort of covers off the main points that I had raised, but are there any other comments or questions that anybody wants to raise on this topic?
There were two issues that arose from our discussion. First of all, there had been some discussion around whether the post-implementary reviews should be under the responsibility of the ISP or whether it should be under the leadership of the trustees. And out of the discussion, the view was that eventually there could be more oversight if felt needed, but there was support that it would remain a responsibility of the ISP. And I think it's consistent with the recommendations of the ISP. And I think it's consistent with how we say the objective should be to help, in fact, be a tool for helping improve the standards. And there have been two other comments made. One was that it would be helpful if, as part of the feedback statement, there was an indication of what the ISB intends to do or not to do with the findings, so that, kind of a communication point. And in all these, people also were keen on reaffirming a need for stability, so that it's not because things are identified that there is overreaction and getting into standard setting mode immediately.
Any other comments? No? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll go back to the disclosure initiative.